This is Robert Stark. I'm joined here with a rabbit. We're going to be discussing Trump's recent invasion of Syria. Rabbit, it's great talking to you.
Oh, thanks for having me back on.
I'm also joined here with my co-host, Pillator.
Hi, Robert. Hi, Rabbit. Nice talking to you guys.
So it looks like Trump just invaded Syria. And I remember how during the election, a lot of people were very kind of enthusiastic about Trump, and they saw him as kind of the anti-war candidate. And I mean, I voted for Trump, and one of my reasoning was, I mean, there were a number of reasons, but that Hillary Clinton was likely to start World War III with Russia. And then there was this period where Trump was, he seemed to be friendly towards Russia, and he said things about Assad in the past, that we should leave Assad alone, and Rex Tillerson, Secretary of State, have said the same thing. And then just out of the blue, he just attacked Syria. I mean, at least Obama kind of went back and forth and had some level of a constraint. But, I mean, this whole thing is... It could be a huge disaster.
Well, I think that the main thing is that you know, Trump was seen, based on his own statements, as like a candidate of non-interventionism, really, that, you know, of saying, you know, that these things, these conflicts aren't really our business, and if we get involved, like, not only is it not our business, but, you know, we're like very likely to make the situation worse, you know, in the long run. Or even in the short run, and so I think it's just been a huge mistake. Now you can say, oh well, you know, you guys were fools for believing that Trump would be, you know, have a coherent foreign policy, but you know, Hillary is out there right now.
Like during the primary, Trump didn't have a totally coherent. Foreign policy. I mean, he didn't go back and forth.
But his statements on interventionism were fairly clear. If you go back and look at, you know, his tweets throughout the years, he was fairly clear, like, that he was less interventionist than any president that we had recently. And, you know, Hillary is still out there right now, like, you know, advocating even more interventionism. So you can't just say, like, well, so you guys should have voted for Hillary. You got duped by Trump, because
no, of course Hillary not. I mean, we really had no other choice.
Yeah, exactly. And I don't know. I just think it's been a disaster. Like, when, because, you know, like you said, you know, people supported Trump because he was, not wanting to intervene in these other countries' civil wars, like, and not just about, like, oh, you know, we need to be more friendly with Russia or friendly with Assad, like no, it's just like, it's none of our damn business, you know. I don't feel any like affinity with Assad or Putin or these people. I just think, like, you know, that's what's going on over there is going on over there. It has nothing to do with us, like. You know, that's really my position. I'm not like pro Assad or pro Putin, really, or any of this stuff. I just, you know, it's not in our interests to be involved in these other countries' civil wars. And like, it's like we haven't learned anything.
If you go back to George Bush, I mean, George Bush ran on a more humble foreign policy, and obviously that was not the case. And the neocons kind of directed his foreign policy after 9/11. But the fundamental difference is George Bush was an establishment candidate. Trump ran explicitly as an anti-establishment candidate. You just look at the people in his cabinet. People like Flynn and now Steve Bannon, who are the most anti-establishment, are gone. And the people left over in Trump's cabinet are the most establishment or neoconish on foreign policy.
Yeah, I mean, now at this point, he's just like surrounded by them. Like, he's just got, you know, he's got all of like the worst people, right? And like the only good people have become marginalized. And you have to just, you know, and a lot of people want to blame this on you know, the fact that, like, oh, well, there's all these neocons and they've convinced Trump to do this. Like, you know, the blame lies with him, you know, because his whole shtick is that he's like this, you know, super like alpha male, you know, leader or whatnot. So, like, you know, he agreed to do this stuff and to order this stuff.
He could have been, you know. He did it immediately. I mean, even a previous, another president. Yeah, I mean, even an establishment candidate who was a major warmonger, say someone like John Kasich got elected. I mean, they would go to war with Syria, but there would be some kind of time frame. I mean, Trump just acted immediately the minute after this incident happened.
Yeah, I mean, it was just like, and it was just so easily, like, you know, you just show, like, some pictures of some dead kids or something. Oh, look, we've got to do something. Like, no, we don't. It's, you know, it's not our, we're not involved in that civil war. There's people dying left and right, and we don't even, you know, I hesitate to say, like, oh, well, you know, we don't know if, you know, if Assad was really responsible for this attack or not. Because it doesn't matter to me. Like, it's still none of our damn business. Like, there's people dying in all kinds of attacks all over the world. Like, it's not, like, why doesn't the correct response would be like, you know, gee, this is unfortunate if this happened over there, but, you know, we need to focus on reducing violence in the United States. You know, we have, like, in some of these cities, you know, we have far more murders of people than what is even going on in some of these conflicts. Like, we need to focus on that and, you know, just focus on our own problems.
And Trump's whole thing was having a tough foreign policy, but only attacking people and coming down strong against people who pose a direct threat to our national security. But then when he put up, what's her name, that UN ambassador,
Haley.
That Indian woman, what's her name? Nikki Haley. She went on this whole kind of rant about those photographs of the dead babies. And the thing about Trump is, like, his argument for war was the sort of liberal humanitarian interventionist argument. I mean, obviously, there's no evidence whatsoever that Assad was behind those sarin gas. I mean, I doubt he was, and he was very cooperative with Obama. When Obama, he made a deal with Obama, he handed over all his gas, and it was really no use to him because it was very difficult to dispose of. But anyhow, Trump's the argument for war is this sort of humanitarian liberal interventionist argument, not Trump's argument in his campaign promise that his foreign policy would be based on removing threats to our national security.
Right. And now he's coming out with, like, oh, you know, the same old BS, like, we have a moral responsibility to, you know, to act in this, you know, which, you know, no, we don't.
I always think of the situation in Syria, especially that there's, you know, the white Syrians. And I always feel like there's this irrational message, whether it may be pro-Judeo or not, or even oil, for that matter. I always feel like there's this weird connection between Syrians being white and being associated with the whole, I guess, whiter culture. Then again, they're not exactly the whites that we assume are Sweppel whites or white Americans. They're actually this different kind of white that's actually kind of like this, you know, South African kind of white that might be mildly downtrodden, but kind of like racially realist, you know? It's really easy to show a dead Syrian baby because other white Americans will say, well, imagine you being that, you know, it's not a dead black baby or a dead Middle Eastern. It's something to do with and I think that has something to do with maybe industrialization that, you know, I always think there's this crypto white racialist message going on, even though I really don't know, like, the plans behind Syria where it could be, you know, Judeo influence, maybe just Israel doesn't like them because they're anti-Semites, or that maybe they just have resources, right? There's all this big plan for it. I really can't say it. It's one of those hard, tricky situations.
I mean, it's funny you mention that because that site, the Daily Stormer, I mean, they're basically kind of like neo-Nazi trolls, but they had a kind of amusing article about when it comes to the Middle East, like, always trust the people who are, like, whiter looking, as opposed to, like,
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Just
compare a picture of Assad and his family to like the fat, disgusting like Saudi king.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't even go that far. In fact, like I just say that as far as all of this stuff, it's really just none of our business. Like, it's none of our business to get involved in any of these other countries' civil wars. Like, there's absolutely no reason to get involved. And, you know, all of the times we've done it, it's been a disaster. Like when we overthrew Iran's democratically elected leader in the 1950s, like, and then had the Shah, and then that was a huge disaster. And now we're still dealing with the repercussions of that, which, you know, we should have just stayed out of there. And instead we've been dealing with this, this problem for 50 years for what was a temporary thing, which, you know, wasn't even really necessary. It's just like the lack of foresight. And then what happens is that when we get involved, then at the end of the day, we get blamed for everything, for the whole conflict and for the results, and you know, for 40 years, whatever kind of situation Syria is going to be in, like, we're going to have to be like paying aid and like doing things and whatnot, because we're going to be seen as responsible for anything that like a future Syrian government does, you know? And so it's just, to me, like, I don't really care about like the, you know, the who's who and the what's what, and like, always, I think, you know, Israel trying to manipulate this or something. It's like, you know, who cares? Like, it wouldn't matter to me if they weren't.
Hardcore libertarian, I'm going to use this jokingly, like Gary Johnson, when asked, what do you think about Aleppo? And what is Aleppo? Right? He doesn't even care, or not even care, but this is not conscious of like Aleppo or even that terms. Like,
yeah,
he didn't even know
where it is.
Yeah, exactly. And it's like, it just shows you the libertarian attitude. It's like, well, that's their problem. It's not mine. So whatever.
Well, yeah, he actually made some other quote that was like, well, I can't attack these countries if I don't know where they are, you know, I think it's a really good point though. It might sound stupid to people, but you know, to me, it's like, well, yeah, you know, I don't know where it is because I don't care about it. I don't have any intention of getting us involved in, you know, in Timbuktu or whatever, like, you know, who gives a shit? Like, you know, and that may be like a hard attitude for some, but you know, which, you know, it's, I think it's much more arrogant to think that it's our place to involve ourselves in these little conflicts. Like, you know, like, oh, daddy's got to come in here and fix everything up. Like, no, we don't. Like, you know, let them manage their own destiny.
It's more like a connection with the Baathist, you know, government, you know, and they're, sinister plan of getting nukes, and I think it is really Judeo in interest. It's basically a religious war between those who align with Jews and those who are anti-Jews. It's the classic Christian Jewish Islam war, but it's just a big modernist thing.
The situation there is basically Assad is the last secular regime left in the Arab world, basically.
But you see the same thing with the situation in North Korea, which is another situation where, you know, Trump just threatened them, and all of these, you know, these neocons are all for intervening there. I think that, like, it's the same kind of situation. You know, the Korean War was, you know, it was almost 70 years ago, almost. And
I think the death toll, it's overshadowed by the World War II and the Vietnam War, but I think the death toll was for U.S. Soldiers was greater than Vietnam.
Yeah, and, you know, why is it 70 years later, like, why are we still over there? Like, it's none of our business. Like South Korea should be able to fly on their own at this point. You know, like, we don't need to be involved in this other country's civil war indefinitely. Like, you know, South Korea is much more advanced than North Korea, and it's really not our place to be involved in this. And these people that are saying, like, well, you know, the North Korean nuclear threat, well, that is an entirely self-created threat. Like, North Korea does not want to attack us because, like, they want to invade the United States. It's because we're over there. You know, we like Iceland isn't worried about being nuked by North Korea. You know, neither is like Argentina. You know, like we only have to worry about it because we're intervening over there. Like it's, you know, it's not after 70 years, like there's no point. And then the South Koreans, like a lot of them don't even want us over there. Like there are places, restaurants and things that say like, you know, Americans not welcome here, you know, and our troops are over there, you know, supposedly helping them to defend themselves. Like they should be, they can, you know, North Korea or South Korea and Japan, you know, should be able to handle it, you know, on their own. There's really no reason for us to be involved over there 7 years later. I don't see how it helps the situation. Now, it's possible that if we left that North Korea would just attack them. But, you know, again, it's, you know, at a certain point, it's not our problem.
And the thing is with Trump, I mean, he didn't even get a congressional approval. I mean, Rand Paul has been pointing that out, and I've criticized Rand Paul in the past for his kind of like hardcore libertarian economics, but I mean, I have to applaud him. He has called out like the Republican Party for the most part has been unanimous in support of Trump, and basically saying, I mean, there's been no congressional approval whatsoever. Trump just did this unilaterally.
Well, the thing with, you know, Rand Paul is someone I don't like really agree with on a lot of issues, but you know, he has a coherent vision, you know, for what he has an ideology that he adheres to, at least that is coherent. It's not one that you and I really agree with much, but like in terms of like, you know, non-interventionism and, you know, U.S. meddling and whatnot, like he understands these issues and has like a coherent, consistent message about it for the most part. So, you know, that's where, you know, Rand has always
and
been good.
Yeah, exactly. And same with Ron Paul. Ron Paul just said that there's basically zero chance that he said zero chance Assad is behind chemical attack. I mean, there's a lot of speculation about who did it. I mean, some people are saying that it's like a deep state, like a false flag attack, like the CIA. I mean, who knows? But I think most likely the chemical attack was done by like the rebels.
Yeah, or you know, they bombed a place that had chemicals in it, and then the chemicals that were in it, like, you know, killed the people. But I think that's really just like kind of a it's almost like a false dilemma or like a trick question, because to me, it really doesn't matter who carried out the attack. It's still none of our business to be involved in that country's civil war. It doesn't matter if Assad did it. It doesn't matter if, like, you know, if Joe Blow, like, threw a Molotov cocktail full of Sarah, like, you know, like, it doesn't have anything to do with us. Like, it has,
well,
you know,
it does affect us who is in power, because Syria is very close to Europe, and if Assad were overthrown and these jihadis were to take over Syria, they're very close. I mean, because it's so close to Europe, I think it's crucial for Assad to stay in power. These issues do affect us, because maybe in hindsight we should have just had a. I mean, in hindsight we should have isolated ourselves completely from the Middle East, but the damage has been done, and we're so interconnected now. So it does really.
Well,
does,
but that's the neocon argument, though, is that's what they always do, is they.
No,
you
the
know,
neocons
they get out, they,
are advocating
no, they,
toppling Assad.
I know, but the point is that the neocons get us like involved in these conflicts, and then they say like, oh, see, like we're already involved. It affects us now. That's what the same argument I've heard about North Korea. Like, yeah, we probably shouldn't have been involved, but now the threat is real because we are involved. So we have to do something. Like, no, we don't. And the thing is regardless of who's in power in Syria, it's a tiny country, and it's up to Europe to keep their borders closed and to keep these people from crossing the border and the refugees. Like, you know, Syria is not a threat to any European nation militarily, like the militaries of these Middle Eastern countries are pathetic. Like that, you know, they couldn't even take over Israel when it had nothing. You know, when all four or five of those Middle Eastern countries invaded, they still couldn't do jack shit.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, their militaries at the time were completely pathetic. I mean, they're only a threat really as far as us letting them into our countries in a massive demographic sense.
Yeah, the only sense that they're a threat to us at all is to the extent that we let them migrate to our countries where, you know, you can have these cells operate or whatever unnoticed, and also the demographics. But it's like, you know, they would be no threat to us at all if we stayed out of it, because, you know, they're not. You know, why does Uruguay not feel threatened by Syria? You know, why are they not worried about them? Like, they're not worried about, like,
if Assad were to be toppled, that would just accelerate the migrant crisis. If the Islamists were to take control of the country, the migrant crisis in that country would accelerate.
Well, but it's like I said, it's up to the Europeans to keep those people out. If they don't, then, you know, they have no one else to blame. But this idea that we should be over there, you know, propping up these secular dictators or even being involved at all, I think is just a farce, because, like, you know, we did that with the Shah, and they overthrew him anyway, you know, and then, like, you know, that's like, they have to be allowed to manage their own destiny. We, you know, we propped a lot of these people up, and they were overthrown. You know, same thing with the, you know, Cuba and some of these other countries. Like, the idea of, like, oh yeah, we'll just keep these in power. Like, it's, you know, it's like playing a game of, you know, I don't know. You know, what's that game where you, like, have to, like,
risk?
You know, with a hammer, or, you know, whatever.
Oh, the whack-a-mole?
Popping up. Yeah, when you have to, the hammer, and you, like, you know, some keeps popping up, and you have to keep, it's like, you know, we have to be there for 100 years making sure that this dude is in power, like in Afghanistan. And, you know, meanwhile, his ass is like laughing to the bank because we're sending him money and stuff. And
it seems like right now the whole Syrian civil war is at this risk board game, like, where I'm looking at the map of Syrian civil war right now, and you have the Syrian government, and you have a big black-gray blob of ISIS, and you have the Syrian opposition, and then you have a small white of the Nusra Front and the yellow up the north, Rojava, I think it is. But if you look at...
the map of who controls which territory.
Yeah, so if you look in the Wikipedia article...
The attack happened in an area where, basically, there was this time when Assad was losing, and the Russians came in, and that helped stabilize things. So basically, ISIS has been pushed back further east to the Iraqi border, and Assad has been winning the war. So he had no incentive whatsoever to make these chemical attacks. But, I mean, back to Rabbit was saying, his point was, even if Assad did do that, I mean, it's really none of our business to intervene into a regime that poses no threat to us whatsoever. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to see what are going to be the outcomes. Is it just going to be some airstrikes, or is this going to be a serious war? Will it lead to a conflict with Russia or Iran, or will it just be a couple airstrikes and we leave? But I mean, a lot of people have been saying that Trump is very compulsive, and he doesn't think things through, and he's very short-sighted. And, you know what I mean? All of those people saying that, they did have a point.
Yeah, I completely agree. You know, when people make these jokes about how, like, you know, Trump just tweets without thinking, and, you know, imagine when he has, like, control of the military and stuff. And, like, you know, you have to admit that that they were right. It really didn't take much.
Those were kind of the kind of people.
It.
Yeah, I mean, those are the kind of people. Obviously, they were. A lot of them were establishment hacks. The kind of people that you don't really want to respect. But I mean, they ended up. I mean, they did have a point.
Yeah, and I think that it brings you know, something else to mind too, and that is that, you know, instead of, and like I posted something like this on Twitter, you know, instead of like, you know, talking about like punching Nazis and all this stuff, like really like the far left and the far right should actually combine forces to try to stop this interventionism, because it's really comes from like the mainstream in the center that supports this. And you see that, you know, Hillary's out there like saying that, you know, we should be taking out these airfields, and you know, you have all of these other neocons like all of the worst people you can think of, like Bill Kristol and Jennifer Rubin, all these people like,
oh yeah, did people, you see that?
They're all celebrating.
Tweet of Bill Kristol and Jennifer Rubin scheming.
Yeah, well, and Jennifer Rubin made a tweet that was like, oh, you know, we elected a second term George W. Bush, you know, and she was like gloating, and I was just like, I'm thinking like, you know, Trump is just an idiot. Like how like gullible are these leaders that, you know, your entire base of support was built on people who didn't want to get involved in this stuff. You know, and here you are like catering to these people who did nothing but make fun of you the entire campaign, and, you know, call you like a Nazi and like, you know, like a Cheeto, you know, and whatnot. Like, it's just kind of like, you know, how gullible can you be? And I'm perfectly willing to ally with like, you know, the worst, like any kind of like, you know, SJW, I don't even care, like blue haired, like obese, like trans black. I don't even care if they're like, if they're against interventionism, like I'm fine with allying with them, even if it means like, you know, I got to eat some pepper spray at a rally.
Tulsi Gabbard, she's an independent-minded Democrat from Hawaii. She's been the most outspoken on this issue on ousting Assad, and she immediately denounced Trump, and she sponsored that bill to stop arming the terrorists in Syria.
I think
Well, I mean, she's always been consistent, but I'm talking about like, you know, I mean, I will ally with, you know, with anyone. I mean, even like, you know, like the Anita Sarkeesians of the world or whatnot. Like, I don't even care. Things are more important.
A lot of those types don't even care about these issues. Or
I think the problem really is the moderate. We're talking about the left and the right here. This might sound very strange, but I've always had a problem with the person who is apolitical or a moderate or a radical centrist or basically an all-out person who claims he's above left-wing or right-wing. And people are foolish because they believe in a system that is basically, you know, neutral, some aristocracy that's basically healthier through God. And what happens is these people who claim to be apolitical or moderate or above it all or some academic intellect is actually the fraud who's running everything and starting in the wars because they think they're doing the right thing for you. It's the liberal mentality. So like people on the left and right, as you were mentioning, from blue-haired whatever to hardcore Daily Stormer rights, they can join alliances because both are scarred to both different ideologies and can join the forces of these two different radical ideologies. It's the normie that's the problem, and whenever the normie comes into power, he has a weak understanding and goes with his natural alien intentions and basically doesn't know anything for us, and that's how I feel about the situation.
I was going to say the thing about Trump is a lot of people were saying that Donald Trump was our very last chance to save this country, and I mean, the few positive trends that have come out of Trump's election have pretty much been destroyed and discredited. I mean, one of the things that's happened is there has been a reduction in illegals coming in because of Trump's promise on a crackdown. I mean, I've seen reports, I don't know the numbers, that illegal immigration has almost halved. And the other thing is he's kind of broken down the Overton window of political correctness. But if Trump just has this horrible legacy of being like this big business warmonger, like George Bush, what's going to happen is, I mean, even if he does do some stuff on immigration and trade, the Democrats are going to win. Trump's not going to be reelected. The Democrats are going to be in power permanently and then use the demographic changes to stay in power.
Yeah, I agree. And you bring up a good point in that, you know, Trump was in a position to actually change the dynamic from like the Republicans being becoming the anti-war, anti-interventionist party, whereas, you know, which they used to be. And then, for a period of time, it was the Democrats who were interventionist. And then, you know, for the last 30 or 40 years, it's been the Republicans that have been always like for every war. And he had the chance to change that dynamic. But now when in the next election or whatever, the Democrats can easily just call him a warmonger. And not only that, but they can pull out all his old tweets, you know, yelling about Obama attacking without congressional approval and so forth. And they can just highlight his hypocrisy. And I really, you know, I don't know how, you know, why anyone would really trust him after this. It was just a total disaster. It shows like just terrible judgment. And, you know, you have to wonder, like, you know, Trump does, you know, tweet, but like clearly he doesn't read the tweets of his millions of supporters. Like he has no idea like what his supporters even want in terms of foreign policy. Like it really just doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, well, he has these advisors. Like he's talked to Steve Bannon, who's been I think he's been fired, or I think
he's been marginalized.
Marginalized. But basically, I mean, Steve Bannon is maybe he's not on the same page as we are completely, but he's much more closer to basically the populist base, and he's someone who's been marginalized, and he's someone who's I'd say is fairly sensible, and I doubt Steve Bannon would approve of this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know for sure, but it's clear that the you know, the people that he's listening to, he's not paying attention to, the people who are his most prominent supporters. You know, like didn't he bother to even call someone like Ann Coulter to be like, you know, what is the, what's the mood out there or something like that? Like, not as though he's got to call these people to get advice on these important decisions or whatnot. But, you know, he follows her on Twitter. Like he follows a lot of these people. Like, but doesn't he know that, like, you know, there would be a massive revolt among his base if he were to do this? Like, it's kind of funny because it reminds me of, Robert Lindsay was like, you know, we need to, you know, make it an alliance with the social justice warriors to go against Trump. And now he wants to just go against the whole right. But I think that's wrong. I think that we should go ally with anyone who is against these specific policies. You know, that's what I think, and not make it really about attacking the right or the left. Cause it really, the divisions are a little bit different than that.
Those key issues, like, as you said, war, because there's definitely a segment of social justice warriors who are just obsessed with all the kind of gender and racial issues, but there, a lot of them have little interest in like the big issues like foreign policy.
Well, they don't, but a lot of it is because Obama was president, so they kind of were willing to look the other way. But, you know, now that Trump is doing it, you know, you might see a resurgence of that, because those people were all very active during the Bush administration when he was getting involved in things. So I think it may be a case of them looking the other way on that. Something you might see a resurgence, but I think you also see a lot of those people because of the moralistic arguments. They are actually a lot of this social justice types. Some of them supported Hillary, and Hillary is advocating for all of this, overthrowing Assad and all this stuff. So there, some of them are on board with that. So it's really very, it's very tricky. But like I said, you know, I'm willing to ally with anyone who is opposed to intervening in this stuff. Even if they don't even like me. You know, it doesn't even really matter. I think that these issues are ultimately more important because there are questions about really about sovereignty and about overextension. And I just think the long-term implications, are just not, they're just not good.
This is probably the absolute worst thing Trump has done, but just look at his horrible health care bill that would strip so many people of their health care. Recently, Trump has signed a bill that was put into place under the Obama administration, and Trump got rid of it, but now that means that internet service providers can sell your personal data, including like browsing history, healthcare information, all kinds of stuff to other companies.
Yeah, and you know, not only that, but you know, don't you remember when Trump said that he supported single payer? You know, like whatever happened to that? Like,
yeah, he did support single payer. I think that was during when he was speculating running as an independent for the Reform Party in 2000.
No, he said it like a lot of times. He said, you know, basically said, yeah, it works fine in Canada. You know, like, what's the problem? Like, but I think that, you know, that's another thing. And you know, one thing that I always said about Trump, even when we had our podcast before, was that he was really at his best when he just went with his own instincts, you know, rather than like he's at his worst when he like does what he thinks that these Republicans want to hear. You know, like when he does what he thinks like a Republican is supposed to do, like when he just says his own, goes off his own instincts. And he said like, yeah, well, I personally think single payer is fine. Like I personally think, we should get rid of birthright citizenship or whatever. Like, you know, I think people should have to show their papers or whatever. He says like, oh, why would we want to get involved in that country's war? Like, it's none of our business. Like, you know, those were when he was at his best. When he starts getting into these trying to be like what he thinks a Republican is supposed to be, I think that's where he always goes wrong.
Yeah, I mean that's the thing is with all these other candidates like McCain, Romney, and the Bushes. I mean, it was obvious that they were frauds, and Bush and Obama did terrible things. But I mean, because I was opposed to them, I have the same sense of disgust. But why I feel such a strong sense of disgust is because I supported Trump.
Yeah, I think so too. Because you know what it does is, it really is like spitting in the face of us because it makes us look foolish. Because all along we were saying like, you know, I'm supporting Trump because he doesn't want us to get us involved, and he's the anti-war candidate. Like, what are you doing supporting Hillary? You know, she wants to do the same old George W. Bush policy. And then, you know, here he goes, and now it makes us look like we were full of shit, you know, by telling people this stuff. And it's like we took him at his word. He was very clear about not intervening in Syria. Like, he has zillions of tweets about it, you know, which I think some of them may have even been deleted since then too. But I don't know if that's for sure or not, because people, people do things with screenshots and whatnot on Twitter. So I don't know if that's actually true. I didn't search myself, but yeah, I think that that's why I feel the same sense of disgust. And also because I remember like, you know, we were a lot younger when Bush was president, but I remember I supported him for a time. And, you know, my feeling now is that like, you know, like never again am I going to like support some candidate because I think that like, you know, they secretly know what they're doing. Like they're playing like 4D chess and like, I just don't have access to what they know, you know, or something like that. Like, I'm just going to take them at face value. And and call them out on it, if I think what they're doing is not in our interests or is bad. Like, you have these people that are like, you know, like, come on guys, like, we don't know all the stuff that Trump knows about this situation. It's like, you know what, like, I don't care. Like,
yeah, but I think that sort of the kind of Trump Sigo fans were constantly apologizing him, but I'm looking over like all the like alt-right blogs including like sites like the Daily Stormer, and they're pretty much like, I'd say at least half of the alt-right is like disowning Trump.
Oh, I'd say more,
or if not more,
that.
Like 80%.
Yeah, I would say like 80%. But I do still see some people like, come on, guys, let's not like rush to judge. Like, let's wait and see what Trump's strategy is here. And it's like, you know what? Like, I remember doing that like during the Bush administration, and it turned out that they had no coherent strategy. And not only that, like, to me, it doesn't matter what his strategy is, because he's already crossed the line and like attacked this country and got us involved. Like, to me, like, just launching the missiles was enough. Like, I was already like already annoyed that he was like, you know, like butting into it, like verbally, you know, condemning this and condemning that. Like, but the fact that he like actually launched some missiles, like, to me, that's just like, you know, like, I'm not going to wait, you know, he needs to be called out on it, you know, for nothing else, except for the reason that he is like, for hypocrisy, you know? And, so I don't know, but yeah, the official alt-left foreign policy, as far as I'm concerned, is, you know, non-interventionism and, you know, not intervening in these foreign conflicts, like, regardless of the circumstances, you know, unless we specifically are threatened. And I don't mean specifically threatened by, like, you know, we bully some country and then they threaten to attack us. And then it's like, oh, we're being threatened. We need to do, like, in the case of North Korea, where we, like, you know, constantly talk about,
like, no threat to us, and the countries that actually are supporting terrorism, like Saudi Arabia, we go out of our way to like ally with them.
Yeah, and like, you know, we give a lot of these countries money too, and you know, when you have to wonder like that, when we have a our national debt is what it is, like, you know, why are we giving any country money? You know, I know that there are some instances where we, you know, we have these scams going where we give them money and then they buy weapons from us and so forth. And, but, you know, you have to wonder, like, what is the value in all of that? It's like, imagine if you're like in a bunch of like personal debt, and meanwhile, like you're out there, like, you know, donating a significant portion of your money to, just giving it away when like you yourself are like not paying off your credit card bills. Like, it just seems stupid.
Yeah. I mean, if Trump, he's kind of doing kind of, I mean, I remember back when we did these shows back in the primary, he's doing the exact opposite of what we recommended he did, basically like kind of gone in a more like radical centrist direction, be strong on immigration and trade, non-interventionist on foreign policy, populist on economics, and except for a few things he's done on some immigration and trade issues, for the most part, I mean, Trump's been, he has all the negative aspects of what Mitt Romney would have done, but even Mitt Romney would have had more constraint than Trump.
Yeah, and also, you know, I mean, if you look at like what is really the, you know, the cumulative difference between like what Trump is doing and like what a Paul Ryan president would say, there's very little difference. I mean, you could say immigration, but you know, Trump has done good things on immigration, but his immigration.
Well, his main Trump's main accomplishment on immigration is not so much policy, it's just that his talk, just talking tough on the issue, has acted as like a strong deterrent to would-be illegals.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, at least like he is, you know, at least he's not saying like, you know, everybody come, you know, everybody's welcome, like, come on in, like, you know.
And yeah,
Hillary
was explicitly saying, she was going to grant amnesty, and not only that, like dramatically increase legal immigration, bring in more refugees from the Middle East. And I mean, I don't think Trump's probably not going to do amnesty. I think on immigration, my prediction is on immigration, I don't think Trump will dramatically improve things. I think he'll just keep the status quo. But here's the problem really is not so much on that issue, is Trump will discredit himself so much that he'll empower the left, and then
exactly
when the Democrats come into power,
he won't have a mandate.
But. Yeah, he'll have no mandate. He'll be completely discredited, irrelevant. Then the Democratic president can come up, will get elected in 2020, and then do all this really insane open border stuff. And I mean, Trump and the people close to him, they have themselves to blame.
Yeah, well, even before that, though, is that, you know, his immigration policies are tied up in the courts, and you have all of these mayors and governors in the sanctuary cities and whatnot that are defying him. And, you know, they're not going to feel obligated to comply or give in to him if he's at like a 25% approval rating because he's starting these wars. Like, they're going to say, like, well, you know, you're so unpopular, but, you know, why would I do what you say? Like, my constituents are happy. Like, you know, there's just, he won't be able to crack down on these sanctuary cities and all of this stuff if he's universally hated. Like, people will just be, they'll just ignore him. Kind of like, you know, George W. Bush in his second term, you know, he lost all his credibility and he was basically considered a lame duck president and couldn't do anything. even if there's a big congressional change in the 2 year elections that are coming up, you know, even that could be like a massive blow to him, because I don't think there's any question that if he keeps up with this stuff, that the Democrats are going to gain in the Congress, and then he's going to be even you know, less able to do it. Keep in mind, you know, he has all three branches, but the Republicans that he has are basically useless.
I'm on Richard Spencer's Twitter, and Richard Spencer is now disowning Trump, and he says Tulsi Gabbard 2020.
Well, yeah,
I think that I mentioned that in my outline before the show, that that Richard Spencer actually came out and said that the official alt-right position is that they're opposed to war in Syria. And he made the point of, like, you know, that it's kind of funny that you know, and we talk about this all the time, that the alt-right constantly disagrees and there's all this fighting, but they're almost 100% united on this issue, that they're, you know, universally opposed to it. The only small difference is that you do have some people that want to intervene, but they want to intervene on behalf of Assad, you know, or like keep him in power. Whereas then you have the other people like me that are just like, well, it's none of our business. Like, I don't care who wins. Like, so you only have really those two factions, but I think, they're totally opposed to what Trump is doing there now. And I just think that, it's interesting he came out with that, because there really is no other, he came out and said, like, this is an official alt-right position that's basically like, you know, something that he's never really done, is basically just like, you know,
now, there's
if,
this weird...
if you don't believe this, then you're out.
I'm looking at Twitter, even Laura Ingraham, who's fairly mainstream conservative, she's denouncing Trump in this. She says, missiles flying, Rubio happy, McCain ecstatic, Hillary's on board, a complete policy change in 48 hours.
Yeah, here's the thing. I think Richard Spencer, I'm looking at his tweets too. He also has hashtag stand with Assad, and shows, you know, the Assad family right there. I want to make a point again, is that Spencer previously had said he has this dream of the European Imperium, where somehow if you're white, you can join in this fantastic club. And I have this irrational thing where I feel like Spencer might be liking Syria because they look white. And if they look white to you, then there's this weird, they could be European Imperium allies. And it's this very, once again, this weird thing that the alt-right might be having with the war of Syria. It's not that so much they want peace, or we don't give a shit about those guys across the pond. It's more like, this is our white brethren. We should not be hurting them and seeing that they're friends.
Well, I think that's absolutely true. But ironically, I mean, one of the reasons why a lot of conservatives are pro-Israel is because...
Jewish?
Because Israelis look white compared to Palestinians, so there's this kind of cryptic racism. So it's ironic kind of on both sides. But I mean, that is true, that Syria is like kind of the... pretty much Syria and Lebanon are like the whitest countries in the Middle East, other than Israel.
I think that's true, but I think, you know, Spencer has been consistent for a long time about a lot of this non-intervention stuff. Like, remember, like, back in the day, he worked at for the American Conservative magazine, even Pat Buchanan. So, like, he does have a history in there with where he used to be kind of associated with some of those anti-war, you know, paleo-conservatives and whatnot. So I don't think that entirely explains it, but I kind of think that it also does go to what we were talking about before, which is that you really have two factions. You have the factions that don't want us to get involved because it's none of our business, and you have people who don't want us to get involved because, like, you know, we already have a better guy over there, you know, like, you know, where they actually, because they're pro-Assad, where it's just like, I'm not really pro or anti, like, I just don't give a shit, you know?
We pretty much covered the whole situation with Trump and the war, and I'm not going to really, I don't want to really invest that much more energy into Trump. I mean, I've lost all, like, any respect that I've had for him. But the question is, I mean, where do we go in the future? We basically are kind of back to where we were, like, square one, where we basically, we kind of have to focus, like, on... Metapolitics, putting out a kind of clear, coherent message on our own, as opposed to getting electoral politics.
Well, I think that what we have to do is we have to focus where we were before on, like, really building our own media and institutions, you know, so that, like, we have people, you know, people like Richard Spencer, but not just him, but, you know, people that are, you know, that are actually, like, you know, they're actually, like, from this sphere, you know what I mean? Like, not, like, trying to, like, you know, influence this one random politician and try to push him in the direction of something, you know, but really he's not really on board and he doesn't really know what the hell we're about. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I think that we need to focus on building up these alternative institutions so that, like, you know, we need to be big enough so that we're there ready as, like, an alternative as people continually turn away from this mainstream, that they have something to go toward. Like, that's, you know, I think that's what, like, things like altright.com for the altleft.com and all of these other sites and clubs and all of this whole, like, mini empire that there is. I think that has to rise up as a kind of alternative that people can move toward. And we have to just focus on building up these institutions as opposed to just trying to, you know, trying to pin our hopes on these, like, these politicians that really just don't have a clue as to what we're about and we're just kind of like, you know, watching to see, like, oh, you know, is he really one of us? Like, you know, is he our guy? Like, you know, and then it turns out, like, oh, no, he's not. Like, that's what I think.
It's more like, I think the election of Donald Trump was pretty much people elected him because he was a person that didn't really come from a political background. He was powerful, and he pretty much said everything civic and everything that was against the liberal establishment, getting him in. And the truth is, meme magic. And there is a Stamazdat. There is a group of people that everyone does have a consciousness. And people were worried that, oh, there's no way that this guy could become president or the values of white nationalism could become powerful. And then it has, and it shocks people's values and you have to reconsider everything. This is definitely will give confidence to all future candidates, whether that may be Bill Gates or Tulsi, you know, or maybe just some celebrity, maybe like Dwayne The Rock Johnson or... whatever, I know he wanted to run for president, I'm not sure. But, you know, the ideal that anybody can run for president, there isn't this stupid game where you have to follow the rules or this silly traditionalism. It's whoever has the most money wins. If there's anything I learned from Donald Trump, it's the ideal that if you got $1 billion and you're powerful, you can do whatever you want. And Donald Trump gives the normal person that power. I think as well that it shows you that the reality we know is breaking down, and that the internet and that there is an underground, which everyone knows is fraudulent. You know, I think the cuck normie is fraudulent and the liberal establishment is fraudulent and does not represent any of those values. Then people have quit. Increasingly contradictory wisdom, and that could lead, you know, more alt-left, alt-right searching, whatever institutions. And I think, you know, you might even see more parties, something like the Libertarian Party, become mainstream, and then the alt-right party becomes the secondary, you know, libertarianism. And then you might see some new left-wing and strange parties happen based upon realities that were never conceived of that sound science fiction or fantasy. So that's what I think about what's going to happen in the future. You'll probably see more celebrities as presidents. If there ever was a woman for president, she must have tits and have sex with a lot of guys because it assures she's a powerful woman. That's what I
and
think.
Be, and be Gongaroo too.
Maybe.
Gongaroo Asian.
You could, but that's my matriarchal power. The matriarchy cannot be this shrewd feminist grandma, you know, that makes you cookies and say, smacks you with a ruler and says you can't do that. Nah, this woman's got to be like sex with guys. She's like game. She's alpha woman and every man wants to have her. And then she becomes a leader and guys look up to her and women look up to her. That's what I would imagine as the first woman of America, first woman American president, a powerful woman everyone wants to jerk off to.
Leader, if Trump bombs North Korea, are you looking forward to all the like North Korean female refugees pouring in?
Well, that certainly would change.
The South Korean ones after the South Korea gets retaliated against.
Well, it's probably going to happen because the capital of it's true, with capital of you know, you're seeing a lot of Muslim refugees, you know, in America popping up like leaf or stink bugs. Yet at the same time, you don't see any guys like having sex with them because they're so prude and so that's how you solve the Muslim problem in America. The only way Muslims are going to be better is if the women just suck up and get big tits and start acting like porn actresses and not like these shrewd hijab-wearing things, right? So as long as white men have sex with them and have their baby offsprings, these half-white Muslims, could Islam be ever an accepted Muslim people be accepted as American creed? You can't just isolate the Muslims and say, well, they're Muslim American. They have their Muslim ethnicity in America, but they don't interracial. That's kind of a truth to the matter, too. And yet, you know, whites do it with every other race, and they conquer that, and if you ever had an option. So, you know, if they have more refugees in America, they probably live because of capital reasons, but it definitely changes the climate. And seeing the Muslims right now, there has to be like this Muslim girl that likes hip hop and stuff that white men have to be after if Muslim culture is to ever Muslim people ever to be accepted.
There's that porn. When we talk about that porn star like Mia Khalifa,
yeah, exactly, like that. Role models are real, and people look up to that stuff, and that's how you, you know, they call it whitewashing. No, I think it's just part of the hierarchical way of, you know, in the racial thing. So,
yeah. So, do you think? Yeah, maybe Lindsay will finally unblock us, you know, now that we've done an anti-Trump. I'm actually like, you know, he's been putting out a lot of good articles about like sex and stuff that I really agree with, which is like reminds me of the stuff that I always liked about his blog. So it would be nice to, you know, to have him back on and be, you know,
I think Robert him, Lindsay be cool likes with us again. What I do actually, and I thinks he considers myself a weird alt-left perspective. I don't know why. He just seems to, from what I've heard and what he likes some of my videos, even though
that's the thing is I used to be a lot more like ideologically rigid, but the more you get involved in these circles, like really the more I think personality ends up mattering because some of the people that you know you might agree with like 90% are just such insufferable assholes that you think that like, well, you know, I'm sorry that like, you know, you're such an obnoxious person that like I have to I find somebody more likable.
Talking about Donald Trump, Robert Lindsay posted an article, Donald Trump a radical free trader. So instead of replacing NAFTA, I think the Bay Area guy was touching on this, but we didn't get into it in detail. But Trump is changing NAFTA But instead of fixing it, he's like getting rid of all these environmental regulations and workers' regulations. So he's creating an even shittier version of NAFTA. I mean, I'm at this point. I mean, I can't think of any. I can think of very little good to say about Trump right now.
Yeah, I mean, I really don't know. You know what he could possibly be thinking. I think that. I think that, you know, what it reminds me, though, of neo-reaction and why there's like a why hereditary monarchy is like is so flawed, because you see him like Trump in there with, like, you know, he's got his kids like working for him and stuff. And like, you know, he's got Ivanka that is like, you know, posting like how upset she is by these photos of these, you know, dead Syrian children or whatever. And like something must be done. And then you have you know, his son-in-law, Jared Kushner, over there, you know, meddling in there. And then, you know, he's supposedly pushing out Bannon. So it kind of reminds me of these old critiques of like hereditary monarchy, where you have, you know, these incompetent children of a ruler, like influencing and in these positions of power that are actually like marginalizing people who potentially know what they're doing. You know, and I think that that's what it reminds me of, like the things people have always criticized about, you know, monarchy. I think in the neo-reactionary community, they always kind of fetishize this idea of strong,
exactly.
You know, monarchy.
It's funny because Melania Trump is the first
looking
lady.
Over. Yeah, I mean, it's plus all that massive subsidies. I mean, I know liberals are complaining about Trump's government subsidies to protect Melania at Trump Tower. But I mean, they totally have a valid point, because he's worth billions. But just looking over these tweets, I mean, even Ann Coulter is denouncing Trump in this. I remember Ann Coulter used to be one of the biggest like neocon warmongers. But kind of to summarize the show, the neocons are never going to fully trust Trump, those like never Trumpers. Trump basically pissed off anyone who ever supported him. I mean, he's completely discredited himself. I guess so. Rabbit, do you want to add one more thing before we wrap up the show?
Well, yeah, I would just say that, you know, as you and I have discussed it, you know, many years ago, like, you know, 15 years ago or something, I identified with some of these, you know, neoconservative positions. And when you see people like Ann Coulter in them now, it's like, what it boils down to is like, you know, some people have the capacity to learn, you know, and some do not. And some are clearly, you know, just, they do have the capacity to learn, but they're actually like, you know, their interests just aren't in our interests, you know? So it's the actual like neocons, you know, Bill Kristol and these people, like, you know, it's not necessarily that they haven't learned. It's just that, you know, their number one interest is like what's best for Israel. But then you have all these other people and it's like, you know, they haven't learned anything from these situations. And I learned a lot, like I became a lot more left wing from studying a lot of the, you know, the Vietnamese conflict and like, you know, the French war in Algeria and Indochina, and all of these things. And, you know, some people have the capacity to learn and not repeat things and not get involved in the same situations. And other people just clearly don't. Like, that's, you know, that's really just the bottom line. And I think that as far in terms of Trump, I think what's happened here is that people memed him into something that he really was not, you know. Okay. And like Cinderella, it's midnight and, you know, the spell is worn off, you know. And that's pretty much the end of that. Now I guess that, you know, there's always a chance that he can redeem himself somehow, and maybe he will. But, you know, I'm not going to make any excuses for the guy, and I'm not going to, you know, be put sticking my neck out there to stick up for him at this point. I mean, you know, you won't see me like out wearing a Trump hat, like willing to get punched in the face, you know, for this guy. You know, I'll, you know, for Spencer or Tulsi Gabbard, you know, sure, you know, I'll wear the hat and take some pepper spray.
I don't think Tulsi would agree to it, but that would be pretty awesome to have like Spencer or Gabbard in 2020.
Or even just saying like, you know, yeah, we disagree on this thing, but let's combine forces just for this issue. Like, you know, who cares? Like, you know, we'll make it about something, you know, something bigger than these other issues. For now, we can always go back to fighting later, but you know, this is more important that, you know, some people should be able to do it.
Spencer came out in favor of nationalized healthcare, which ties in with your kind of alt left.
Yeah, it was great. You know, Spencer is pretty close to my views, actually. It's just that I think part of the main difference is maybe his neo-imperialism also, and also just some of his more, you know, more traditionalism. But it's hard to tell, you know, how much of that is really traditionalism and how much of it is just catering to his audience. But, you know, both you and I have hung around like the rank and file of the alt-right to know that like we really just don't fit in with them. You know, they're like hardcore traditionalists. They're constantly harping on degeneracy, and you know, we're all degenerates here. So like, you know, but we're all going into, you know, we got to have our own thing or whatever, but that's all I have to say.
Do both you guys both regret your vote for Trump?
I don't regret it because, you know, the alternative was not anything better, you know? So I guess, you know, if, you know, who, there was no other alternative candidate running, perhaps if it would have been Trump versus Jim Webb, you know, then there would have been something.
Yeah. I love Jim.
You know, yeah, there would have been some, I wish that he would have done better, you know, but in terms of the choices we had.
My first vote ever was for Gary Johnson back when it was Obama versus Romney. And I was proud to vote for Gary Johnson because I was confident that libertarianism was a system that should live up above Obama and, you know, Romney. I voted for Trump because I hated the liberal establishment, and I'm confident with standing up for Trump is because he was the shit disturber. He's a big fuck you to the establishment, and I stand by that. And I think it is a good event, and if we were to have Hillary as our first woman president, the narrative would be sad and there would be more chaos. But I think the chaos was a little subtle and people have learned to vote for Trump and fuck over some normies. And so I'm quite proud I voted for Trump, and I'm actually glad he's the president.
Well, we are at the end of the show. I would like to thank Rabbit and Pillater for being on.
It's nice talking to you, Rabbit and Robert.
Same here.